Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I'll be reading the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, May 9th, 2021. I'm narrating these articles on Thursday, May 13th. I'll read the most recent articles first. COVID-19 update. A look at San Angelo coronavirus data for May. Tom Green County as of May 13th from the city of San Angelo. 16,832 positive cases reported. 8 new positive cases. Deaths 308, 199 from Tom Green County and 109 from other counties. 4 currently hospitalized, 49 active cases. Tom Green County COVID-19 Vaccine Tracker, 29% of people fully vaccinated, by Chastity Latsky. Tom Green County has administered more than 70,925 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine as of May 11th, according to data from the Texas Department of State Health Services. That's up 2% from the previous week's tally of 69,224 COVID-19 doses administered. In Tom Green County, 29% of people living in Tom Green County are fully vaccinated as of May 11th. The CDC considers someone fully vaccinated 2 weeks after they've been given a single dose shot, Johnson & Johnson, or a second dose, either Pfizer or Moderna. Second man charged in 2008 San Angelo shooting of Jordan Holden, by Elena Edgen, published May 13th. A second man has been arrested in the 2008 San Angelo shooting death of Jordan Holden, according to a San Angelo police news release. Police have charged Raymond Andrew Lee Rice, 32, of Allen, in connection to the former cold case. Police arrested Patrick Stewart Jr., 33, in Katy, and charged him in connection with the case on April 27th. He was a person of interest during the investigation and identified through familial DNA evidence, according to the release. There is no information additionally available for the release at this time. What we know about the death of Jordan Holden. Nearly 13 years ago, on July 2008, a group of four friends arrived at a residence in West Harris Avenue, where they were ambushed by armed intruders, records state. A struggle ensued, and the friend who lived there called out for help. Jordan Holden, 22, answered his friend's call and met gunfire as he rushed into the home. Another friend was shot in the leg, according to previous reports. Police arrived to find Holden unresponsive. Though his friend survived, Holden was pronounced dead at the hospital. He left behind his girlfriend, who was 4 months pregnant at the time. First ever Railway Days Festival, set for Saturday, by Linda Thorson Bond. Published May 13th. The Railway Museum of San Angelo is on track for a big day Saturday, May 15th. The first ever Railway Days Festival will fill the surrounding area with food, fun, entertainment, history, and pop-up booths from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The museum was honored this year by the Texas Historical Commission for significant contributions to historical preservation, education, and community outreach. According to Board of Directors President Susanna Valenzuela, the Railway Days Festival continues that trend by displaying the historic train depot to the public. Saturday is also Goodfellow Appreciation Day, and all members of the military get into the Museum for Living History tours for free. The street around the restored 1910 Railway Depot will be closed off for food vendors, including CT Dogs, The Crazy Fruit, Shayla's Kitchen, Angelo's Best Funnel Cakes, and Rusa's Mexico. Pop-up vendors include Color Street Nails, Tiffany Elise Designs, Curious and Coward Dog Bakery, The Saul and Sage Apothecary, Simple Gifts, Bluebonnet Soapery, Desperado Diva, Pure Beret, Grace and Grit, Kay's Biddy Cakes, Year Year Out Parties and Decor, South Elm Street Boutique, Everything in Between, and The Train Geek. The most unusual pop-up is Train Treasures, which will sell items from the Railway Museum that are no longer in the collection. There are model train pieces, as well as things that have been donated to the museum, like 15 used printers. The highlight of the preparation for Railway Museum volunteers was the opening of a boxcar where unused items have been stored for years. These items have been carefully curated to release items that other people can enjoy and save items that stay in the museum's collection. Everyone's invited to come see the curiosities that have been hidden at the museum for who knows how long. Entertainment includes Rather Roads, 10 a.m. to noon, the Concho Cowboy Company Shootout at high noon, Manny Campos after the shootout until 2 p.m., and Billy Dan Langley from 2 to 4 p.m. Some of the sweetest and tamest residents of Peaceful Valley Donkey Rescue will be outside the museum from 10 a.m. to noon. Inside the museum, there are living history tours with volunteers in costume as they would have been in 1910, the year the Kansas City, Mexico, and Orient Depot opened. In the lobby, there is a silent auction that includes a tabletop fire pit donated by Westlake Ace Hardware, a collectible village and train donated by Patty Corona, an item from Texas Angelo Boutique, a rare cigar box train collection, and more. On the second floor, there are five rooms of scale model trains that will be steaming around their tiny tracks all day. The Railway Museum is a nonprofit organization that depends on admissions and donations from people who love San Angelo's history. 100% of every dollar spent at the museum goes directly to maintaining the facility and historical artifacts that are a part of San Angelo's past and its future. Sponsor of the first Railway Days Festival is Discover San Angelo. The 2021-22 Railway Museum memberships are available, and all members are admitted free to the museum for a year. Each month, there is a new treasure hunt with a chance to win a great prize. Regular tickets for the Living History Tour are $3 for children, $4.50 military, and $5 adults. Visit the Railway Museum at 703 South Chadbourne Street. Contact them by calling 325-468-2140 or visit online www.sanangelorailway.org. What we know about a shooting in Eden that left two Concho County Sheriff's deputies dead, by Nate Shute. Originally published May 11th, updated May 13th. A pair of Concho County Sheriff's deputies were killed in Eden on Monday night, according to police reports. Here's what we know. Suspect identified as Jeffrey Nicholas. Police have identified the suspect as Jeffrey Nicholas, who was booked into Tom Green County Jail on two charges of capital murder of a police officer. His bond has been set at $4 million. Identities of Concho County Sheriff's deputies released. The Sheriff's Department identified the deputies as Samuel Leonard and Stephen Jones. Shooting took place in Eden. At approximately 8:40 p.m., the deputies were dispatched to the 100 block of Bryan Street for a dog complaint. An Eden City employee also arrived at the house. While making contact with an individual at the residence, an altercation occurred which quickly escalated to gunfire, according to Sergeant Justin Baker with the Texas Highway Patrol. An eyewitness said a dog that was not owned by Nicholas ran onto the suspect's property. The witness, a city employee, said Nicholas told the deputies to get off his property. As a result, the two deputies were fatally wounded and the city employee was critically wounded. A candlelight vigil took place at Eden Square the following day. The community is rallying with fundraisers and other donations to the family. Governor Greg Abbott and Representative August Pfluger extend condolences. Texas Governor Greg Abbott reacted to the news of the deputies' deaths on Twitter by collectively saying, "Our hearts go out to family and friends of those who knew the two deputies." He said the events were a solemn reminder of the risks our brave law enforcement officers face while protecting our communities. On the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives, Representative for Texas's 11th Congressional District, August Pfluger, called for the deputies and all members of the law enforcement to be honored. "It's time that we stand up and honor them and thank them for what they do," Pfluger said. "As a country, I request that we keep all law enforcement officers in our hearts, our thoughts, and our prayers, and we thank them for what they do." How can the community help the deputies' families? The Concho County Sheriff's Office is asking for those who wish to donate items to the deputies' families to send them to P.O. Box 67 in Paint Rock, or to bring them to their office in Eden. The Sheriff's Office says accounts are being set up at both Eden State Bank and Paint Rock Bank to benefit both families. When will funerals for both deputies take place? Funeral services for Leonard will be Monday, May 17th at the First Baptist Church in La Mesa. Funeral services for Jones will be on Wednesday, May 19th at Paul Ann Baptist Church in San Angelo. Exclusive. Eyewitness to Eden shooting said suspect told deputies to get off his property. By John Tufts, published May 12th. A municipal employee took cover behind a city pickup truck when gunfire rang out earlier this week and ended the lives of two Texas lawmen in the small town of Eden. The shooting happened Monday, May 10th, 2021, at the beginning of National Police Week, hours after flags around the country were raised to remember officers lost or injured in the line of duty. Two Concho County deputies were gunned down in the small city of Eden, population 1,899. A spokesperson for the Texas Department of Public Safety said the deputies, Samuel Leonard and Stephen Jones, were fatally wounded while making a seemingly routine call for a dog complaint. A City of Eden employee who arrived at the house was critically wounded after being shot in the stomach. Members of the Texas Rangers later arrested Jeffrey Nichols, 28, who was booked into Tom Green County Jail for capital murder of a police officer. His bond has been set for $4 million. The Standard Times reached out to multiple agencies requesting information about the arrest of Nicholas. As of noon, Wednesday, May 12th, official details on what led to the fatal shooting were scarce. Eden City employee says, "I saw him pull the gun." Eden resident David Hutchings said he was standing about 30 feet away when the gunfire erupted. He gave his account of what happened Monday night. "I was right on the street," Hutchings said. "I saw Nicholas pull the gun." Hutchings is a city employee for the City of Eden in their Department for Public Works and Services. His job, he said, involves a little bit of everything for the city, some of which entails repairing water leaks to municipal sewer lines, as well as assisting with animal control. That last role is what brought Hutchings to the 100 block of Bryan Street for a dog complaint on May 10th. Hutchings said he and two city employees were notified two dogs had bitten someone earlier that day in Eden. When they arrived to collect the dogs, he said the homeowner fled with both animals. "He tried to escape with both the dogs, and the cops pulled him over," Hutchings said. "They got one of them and put them in the cage, but one dog got loose and ran into Jeff Nicholas's yard." According to Hutchings, Nicholas did not own either animal. "It had nothing to do with him," Hutchings said. Then stated Nicholas told both Concho County deputies they couldn't enter his yard to collect the dog. "Jeff told them to get off his property," Hutchings said, noting Nicholas told both deputies he has his civil rights. Hutchings stood about 30 feet away on the street as the confrontation escalated into violence, which, according to him, took roughly 15 seconds. Hutchings said Nicholas told both Jones and Leonard, "I will shoot y'all," as they walked up towards him, rushed him, and he pulled a gun and shots were fired, Hutchings said. An arrest affidavit obtained by the Standard Times states a struggle ensued between Nicholas and both deputies. During the struggle, Jones said Leonard attempted to use an electronic control device on Nicholas in order to gain compliance. Nicholas took out a semi-automatic pistol and fired, striking and killing both deputies, the affidavit stated. I was there to collect the dogs. I don't think we ever got those dogs, Hutchings said. As gunshots rang out, Hutchings said he and another city employee took cover behind a city-owned pickup. Then a bullet went through the pickup's door and struck a third city employee, Hutchings' boss. It hit my boss in the stomach, Hutchings said. Everything went quiet. He got out of the truck and said he was shot. I threw him in the back of the truck and rushed him into the emergency room. A DPS spokesperson on Wednesday identified Hutchings' boss as Eden City employee Ronnie Winans. Winans was transported to Shannon Medical Center by Concho County EMS and is in stable condition, according to a DPS news release. Affidavit states, suspect confessed and apologized for killing deputies and wounding city employee. During an interview with investigators, Nicholas made confessions and apologies for shooting and killing the deputies and for shooting a City of Eden employee, an affidavit stated. On Tuesday night, Hutchings attended a candlelight vigil in honor of the two slain deputies. He and a group of nearly 300 people congregated en masse at the historic City Square of Eden, 120 Paint Rock Street. They came to mourn, to cry, to hug, and hold one another, and begin the healing process after what local authorities called a senseless tragedy. I knew Stephen Jones, Hutchings said. He was a nice guy. I didn't know Leonard. He had just barely started. This will only make our town stronger, said Courtney Torres, who helped organize the candlelight vigil. Torres, clutching a microphone and standing underneath a large gazebo, looked out over a sea of people dressed mostly in blue. We will overcome this because we are a family, she said. Hutchings echoed what Torres had to say. The town of Eden, which sits about 160 miles west of Austin and 45 miles southeast of San Angelo, has a population of around 1,900. It's a small town, and this whole town is family, he said. Funeral services for Leonard will be Monday, May 17th at the First Baptist Church in La Mesa. Funeral services for Jones will be on Wednesday, May 19th at Paul Ann Baptist Church in San Angelo. San Angelo lines the streets to pay respect to slain Eden officer. By Elena Edgen, published May 12th. Crowds of people lined the streets Wednesday to pay respects as the body of a Concho County Sheriff's deputy was brought to San Angelo. Sergeant Stephen Jones was one of the two deputies killed on Monday in Eden. At about 11:40 a.m., Wednesday, May 12th, an honor guard escorted his body to Johnson's funeral home in San Angelo from Lubbock. Oncoming traffic into the area was closed temporarily as Jones's body was taken into the funeral home at 435 West Beauregard Avenue. Citizens were seen lining the streets, blocks from the funeral home. Blue flags were raised, right hands were seen over people's hearts, and crying sniffles were heard as the slain deputy passed with police from all over the state. Cloudy skies and cool wind made the procession even more sorrowful. How to help the families of the fallen Concho County deputies. Donations, fundraisers, and more. By Rosanna Frere, published May 13th. Two Concho County Sheriff's deputies were killed in a shootout in Eden on Monday night, according to police reports. The deputies, Samuel Leonard and Sergeant Stephen Jones, were fatally wounded after they were dispatched to the 100 block of Bryan Street for a dog complaint. Several fundraisers to help the families have already been planned. Here are different ways to honor the slain officers and their families. This story will be updated as more information becomes available. Funeral services. The Concho County Sheriff's Office has released information on funeral services for the two deputies on its Facebook. Visitation for Sergeant Jones will be held on Tuesday, May 18th from 6 to 8 p.m. at San Angelo's Johnson's Funeral Home, 435 West Beauregard Avenue. Funeral services will be Wednesday, May 19th at 1 p.m. at Paul Ann Church, 2531 Smith Boulevard in San Angelo. Funeral services for Deputy Leonard will be held on Monday, May 17th at the First Baptist Church in La Mesa at 2 p.m., according to Brannan Funeral Home website. Prayer Chain. On Saturday, May 16th at 1:30 p.m., members of the community will join hands and form a living prayer chain. Those attending are asked to gather at J. Wilde's at 20 East Concho Street in downtown San Angelo. T-shirts will be available for purchase at $20. All proceeds and donations will go to the San Angelo Police Officers' Charities and will be given to the families of the fallen officers. For more information, contact Mary Coffey at 325-234-5835 or via email at mcoffey@mwcinterests.com. Brisket Meal and Raffle Fundraiser. There will be a meal and raffle fundraiser Saturday, May 22nd at the Roy Burns Pavilion in Lee Pfluger Park in Eden beginning at 11 a.m., benefiting both families, according to the Eden Echo. The brisket meal will be served with a drink and dessert sold by donation for dine-in or carry-out. You can pre-order half and whole briskets before May 18th. Raffle tickets will be $5 each or 5 for $20. Prizes will be drawn throughout the day. For questions, donating items, or raffle tickets, contact 325-456-0355. 325-456-0114. Or 325-869-0111. Money donations at banks. There are two accounts being set up at the Eden State Bank, one for each deputy. You can contact Laura Davis at 325-869-5511 for more information or instructions on how to donate. The bank has generously donated money to each account, according to the Concho County Sheriff's Office Facebook page. There's also an account set up with the First State Bank of Paint Rock for both officers. Contact 325-732-4386 for any information on how to donate. Online donations. An online donation fundraiser has been made for Leonard on Fund the First, a website that crowdfunds for first responders and military. Other donations. If anyone is wanting to send anything to the families of Jones or Leonard, please send items to P.O. Box 67 in Paint Rock or bring by the Sheriff's Office in Eden. We will make sure the families receive them, the Concho County Sheriff's Office Facebook page stated. Update. Three in Big Spring arrested in connection with stabbing death. From staff reports, published May 13th. Two arrests were made this week in connection with the May 4th stabbing death, in addition to one arrest last week, Big Spring police said in a Thursday news release. Police, fire, and emergency medical services personnel responding to a man lying unresponsive in a gas station parking lot at 2501 South Gregg Street at about 7:30 p.m., found Antonio Iglesias, 25, with a laceration to his chest, an initial release stated. According to the initial release, officers attempted life-saving measures, but Iglesias died from his injuries. Police said Thursday that an autopsy confirmed that Iglesias died from a stab wound. Investigators determined that Iglesias had been involved in an altercation in a small red vehicle at the station, the release said. Shortly later, he fell out of the vehicle with a stab wound to his chest and the vehicle left the scene. Three arrests have been made in connection with the homicide, police said. Marcus Anthony Melendez, 19, was arrested about 3 a.m. May 5th and was housed at Howard County Jail awaiting arraignment, according to the initial release. In the Thursday release, police announced the arrests of Bryant Matthew Hilario, 17, and Christopher J. Solis, 18, at approximately 4:40 p.m. Wednesday and 10:34 a.m. Thursday, respectively. Both Hilario and Solis have been charged with murder, the release said. The investigation is ongoing, police said Thursday, and no further information will be released at this time. Still under lawsuit, city to hold public hearing on children's gymnastics group in Santa Rita. By John Tufts, published May 11th. A children's gymnastics business at the center at the lawsuit between the city of San Angelo and residents living in the Santa Rita neighborhood will soon face more scrutiny. For over a year, Life Point Baptist Church, 810 Austin Street, has hosted Texas Tumbleweeds Gymnastics after city council approved a special use permit allowing the children's group to operate in the Santa Rita neighborhood. Three residents in the area felt the city's decision was an overreach of its authority and that not enough notice about the permit was provided to residents. They filed a lawsuit in 2019 seeking $100,000 in damages and termination of the permit. The case remains unresolved. Earlier last week, the San Angelo Planning Commission announced it will conduct a public hearing at City Hall on Monday, May 17th, to review the special use permit giving residents a chance to voice their support or disapproval. John James, Planning and Development Services Director for San Angelo, said it wasn't unusual for the city to periodically review such permits. He noted in this case, the city's decision had become controversial, as well as the lawsuit's assertions that residents weren't adequately informed. We believe we met all the standards of state law, but we are bringing this back for a review, just to give any property owners who may not have gotten an opportunity to weigh in, James said. In previous letters of opposition, Santa Rita residents against Texas Tumbleweeds operating at Life Point Baptist Church cited concerns with noise and more traffic in the area. James said he and other city staff reviewed complaints over the past year and watched traffic during times the gym was open. We've had a year to see how the operation of that facility has been, James said. Staff's recommendation is that it has not had a major impact on the surrounding neighborhood, and so therefore we're still recommending that it be allowed to continue to operate. James said that the May 17th public hearing would allow Santa Rita residents an opportunity to present any information they have if they disagree with staff's assessment. After the Planning Commission's meeting, he noted City Council would review the special use permit, possibly in June. How to make your voice heard. What? A public hearing to reauthorize a special use permit allowing an indoor multi-use recreational facility and related recreational activities, daycare, community outreach, community services, and educational programs on properties zoned single-family residential and two-family residential at 810 and 811 Austin Street and 818 Kenwood Drive. The meeting will begin at 9 a.m. Monday, May 17, 2021, at East Mezzanine of City Hall, 72 West College Avenue. How to submit written comments. Members of the public who want to submit a written comment in support or opposition may do so via email to planning@cosatx.us. before noon, Sunday, May 16th, 2021. For more information, contact the City of San Angelo Planning Commission at 325-657-4210. 25 years later, Brownwood area man found dead by burning car. Case remains unresolved. By Elena Edgen. Published May 10th. Juan Leon Laureles spent much of his life tending to his ailing parents. He loved his family, job, and life. But he hid something that wouldn't have been easily accepted in 1996 West Texas. He was gay. Some people speculate this may be why the Bangs resident was found dead by his burning 1988 Ford Thunderbird on a lonely rural road outside of Brownwood on May 10, 1996. Others, including law enforcement, believe he saw something he shouldn't have. Speculation aside, one thing remains true. His death was no accident. As the 25th anniversary passes, his family continues to push his story out with the hopes his killer will be found and charged. Who was Juan Leon Laureles? A caring uncle, best friend, and Madonna fan. The youngest of nine children, Laureles ended up taking care of his parents from a young age at their home in Brady. By 14, he had a driver's permit and drove them to appointments, picked up their medication, and ran the household. He never complained, said Arlene Harbison, his niece, who was nearly 3 years younger than him. It was just something he took on. He felt like it was his responsibility. Harbison and Laureles grew up together like siblings, as they were closer in age than they were to their own siblings. They played in the high school band and would dance the night away at the local dance hall. He liked pop music, and his favorite was Madonna, Harbison said. At the time of his death, his favorite song was Because You Loved Me by Celine Dion. We played it at his funeral. Laureles also moved to San Angelo to help Harbison with her firstborn, then to Brownwood to continue helping her family. He looked after her sons in the day, then worked at the Kroger grocery store in Brownwood at night. That love and kindness reached his co-workers, who would always receive a birthday present from Laureles, she said. He stepped in whenever someone needed help, Harbison said. He was such a big, gentle giant. He was also Harbison's best friend. The day she received the news of his death remains the worst day of her life. About 2:30 a.m., May 10, 1996, Harbison's cousin called her. She was crying. She said someone killed Leon, Harbison said. I think I dropped the phone. I was crying. As that day continued, the weather matched her mood. It was a gray, rainy day to start Mother's Day weekend. She recalled saying the rain was God's tears because Leon was such a good person. Even 25 years later, Harbison and those who knew Leon continue to fight for answers. I know somebody knows something, Harbison said. Maybe they're willing to come forward. What we know about the moments before his death. Leon, as he was known, lived a fairly quiet life. His death was anything but quiet. 2 days before his death, Leon told his sister he was afraid people wanted to hurt him, but wasn't sure why, according to family interviews with the Fall Line podcast. On May 10, 1996, Leon left his brother's home and drove 15 minutes away to his midnight shift at Kroger. Co-workers reported seeing his 1988 Ford Thunderbird in the parking lot at about 11:45 p.m., but it was gone by midnight, the start of Leon's shift. Another vehicle, which had parked beside him, also left at the same time. About 30 minutes later, first responders arrived to a vehicle on fire near a dirt road on Farm to Market Road 2126 near a gun range. They found him shot execution style beside his burning car. He was on his knees and they shot him in the back of the head, Harbison said. There had to be someone driving and another person who forced him to drive out to the gun range. There had to be more than one person. In 2008, the case appeared to heat up when law enforcement said they had persons of interest, but no arrests were made, and the case went cold again. Harbison reached out to multiple organizations with her uncle's story and caught the attention of The Fall Line, a Georgia-based podcast that investigates cold cases. Brooke Gently and Laura Norton, from the podcast, agreed that the case appears to be solvable. I think the family could use support with their efforts to publicize this case, particularly support in their efforts to raise community awareness, said Norton. I'm very hopeful that with the heightened interest in cold cases, someone's going to review the file again. Crowds returned to see bison and longhorns at San Angelo State Park. By Colin Murphy, published May 9th. In a sign that things are slowly returning to normal in Tom Green County, dozens of people showed up to a viewing area at San Angelo State Park on Saturday to catch an up-close glimpse of some of the wildlife roaming the land. Slowly trotting up to the viewing area with a little encouragement from a park vehicle distributing food, a small herd of bison and longhorns treated visitors to the park on Saturday to an unobstructed view. The event was accompanied by information about the animals from San Angelo State Park interpretive ranger Bonnie Wallace. Wallace said the viewings served to educate the public about the tradition surrounding the animals and the cultural legacy they have in the region. The viewings are also seen as a return to normal operations in the park after COVID-19 restrictions limited the number of people allowed at the events. This is one of our biggest attractions, Wallace said. We just want to get people out to the park. People love coming to see these animals, and we get to explain their history to Texas and why they're important and why we have them here in the park. We're trying to go back to normal as much as possible. Wallace said viewing events such as the one on Saturday act as a way to remind people of the past, as well as the connection between the animals and the state of Texas. This is an educational tool, Wallace said. A lot of people don't know about the history of the bison and the longhorn. The longhorn were one of the main animals on the cattle drives and helped establish Texas. We want to let everybody know about these magnificent animals and their true story. It helps provide an appreciation for them. Deceased Infant's Remains Recovered from Brady Lake, by Colin Murphy, published May 8th. The remains of a deceased infant were discovered by a fisherman on Brady Lake at about 2 p.m. Friday, May 7th, according to information released by the Brady Police Department. The remains were found partially submerged in an ammunition container. The fisherman removed the container from the water and discovered the body inside, according to the Brady police. Law enforcement was notified, and the incident is under investigation. The area was closed off to water traffic and pedestrians. An autopsy will be performed Monday, May 10th, at the Central Texas Medical Examiner's Office in Lockhart. This is an ongoing story, and information will be updated as it becomes available. San Angelo Central graduate writes book to help men grow through difficult times, by Rosanna Frere, published May 8th. A San Angelo Central graduate has written a book with the purpose of helping men grow through difficult times. The Savage Path, a memoir on modern masculinity, was written by David L. Savage, a 1978 graduate of Central High School. Savage grew up as an Air Force brat in West Texas, with a deep scouting background beginning in Cub Scouts, which he said led him to write the book. I'm still furious about what has happened to the Boy Scouts of America, Savage said. They filed for bankruptcy, and it's no longer called the Boy Scouts of America. That was kind of the genesis of the idea, was to capture what it used to be, a superb organization to help boys become responsible, productive young men. Since Savage has been backpacking his whole life, he felt a wilderness metaphor would be best for the book. The theme is using the metaphor of the wilderness and when we go through life on our journey, he said. I'm a Christian, and I think that God has a common purpose for all men, and it's to find a will to obey his will, which I didn't always do. In his book, Savage discusses challenges he had in life from being divorced to losing multiple family members. It's not a preachy book at all. It's just basically stories of my life and a humble offering, he said. sometimes you get off the proper path and you're just out there bushwhacking. That's kind of like myself when I was making mistakes versus when I was in God's will. The book is designed to provide information for young men who might have grown up without a father. I wanted to try to help those who would be looking for that kind of comfort for their life if they didn't get it from someone else, Savage said. Savage has 3 sons and got divorced after 31 years of marriage. He remarried and gained 2 stepsons. Their biological father had problems dealing with alcohol and abuse, so they didn't have a great example of a good father, he said. The kids are smart, but they're like a boat with no ballast. A little wave will tip them over. Savage met young boys and girls through ministries and drug rehab who were in the same boat. It just really softened my heart, he said. I have a passion for young men's ministry. I'm going to go to work for God full time now. The book, published on January 31st, 2021, can be purchased at www.thesavagepath.com. San Angelo ISD to end virtual learning. Here's how to register for in-person classes. By John Tufts, published May 7th. More than a year after COVID-19 led officials at San Angelo ISD to institute virtual learning classes, the school district announced Friday it no longer plans to offer online instruction in the 2021-22 school year. On Friday, May 7th, a district news release stated the Texas Education Agency, TEA, had not approved school districts to offer virtual instruction as a replacement for in-person attendance for the upcoming school year. Being in person for school is critical to address academic achievement and provide authentic real-world experiences. As a result, SAISD does not plan to offer instruction through the Virtual Learning Academy for students in the 2021-2022 school year, a news release stated. District officials announced teachers will continue to utilize the virtual learning system, Schoolology, as a means for incorporating technology in the classroom, but stated it would be no substitute for attending school in person. Students will be counted absent from school in accordance with the attendance policy outlined in our student handbook, the news release stated. How to register for in-person classes. Students attending San Angelo Independent School District will return to campus in August. Officials encouraged parents to complete online registration for enrollment for the 2021-2022 school year by visiting the following link. SAISD.org/new-2-SAISD/enrolling. Four San Angelo tax preparers charged with trying to scam the IRS out of $18 million. By Rosanna Frere. Published May 9th. Four San Angelo tax preparers have been indicted after falsifying clients' tax returns to inflate tax refunds, according to the United States Department of Justice. On Wednesday, April 14, 2021, a federal grand jury indicted Hugo Cesar Granados, the 60-year-old manager of Columbia Tax Service, his adult daughter, Blanca L. Granados, his adult son, Hugo Alberto Granados, and employee, Saul Garcia Soto, on one count each of conspiracy to defraud the United States and several counts each of aiding in the preparation of false documents. Hugo Cesar Granados, Blanca Granados, and Hugo Alberto Granados surrendered themselves to IRS, criminal investigations, and U.S. Marshals on Thursday, May 6, 2021, the release stated. Saul Garcia Soto remains a fugitive. The elder Mr. Granados and his co-conspirators falsified their clients' individual income tax returns, Forms 1040, in order to inflate the client's tax refunds, the release stated, attributing the indictment. Conduct like this is a slap in the face to the many hardworking Americans who pay their taxes dutifully every year. We will not stand for tax fraud, especially by authorized tax preparers, said Acting U.S. Attorney Priyank Shah. As a member of the IRS's refund transfer program, Columbia Tax Service didn't charge the taxpayers anything up front, but took their preparation fee from the refund before issuing the remainder to the taxpayer. Mr. Granados created a training manual that instructed his employees how to file fraudulent tax returns, the release stated. The group allegedly fabricated clients' itemized deductions, sole proprietorship profit, and loss statements. They routinely claimed the taxpayer owed a business when no such business existed, claimed unreimbursed employee expenses, such as travel and per diem, and claimed business expenses related to maintenance, utilities, supplies, insurance, and professional services that were never incurred, according to the release. From 2013 to 2017, the conspirators submitted numerous fraudulent tax returns, resulting in an estimated $18 million in tax losses to the government. These defendants made a profit by falsifying their clients' tax returns without concerns of the repercussions and now face the true costs of their actions in court, said IRS CI Acting Special Agent in Charge Jerry Gomez of the Dallas Field Office. All defendants are presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. If convicted, Hugo Cesar Granados faces up to 14 years in federal prison. Blanca Granados faces up to 14 years. Hugo Alberto Granados faces up to 17 years. And Saul Garcia Soto faces up to 20 years, the release stated. IRS Criminal Investigations conducted the investigation. The San Angelo Division of the Northern District of Texas is prosecuting the case. Ladder-backed woodpeckers, a common bird in most of Texas. By Michael Price, special to the San Angelo Standard-Times, published April 7th. Living in the harsh, arid lands of western Texas can be quite challenging. All sorts of creatures depend on and compete for the minuscule amounts of shade and water that exist here. But regardless of how uninhabitable an area appears, there are always animals that have adapted to such harsh environments, and one such avian species is the ladder-backed woodpecker. Woodpecker of various species are familiar to most people, even those who do not spend much time outdoors. Perhaps this knowledge is due to the famous cartoon character Woody Woodpecker, who, incidentally, still annoys me with his laugh as much as it did when I was a kid. The ladder-backed woodpecker is a common bird throughout most of the lower western half of the United States. It can be observed almost throughout the entire state of Texas, with the exception being the densely forested far eastern portions of the state. It is not a migratory species, meaning that it occurs in the Texas range year-round. This attractive and somewhat colorful species of bird is small, with a body length of approximately 7 1/4 inches, while the wingspan can approach 12 inches. The back, shoulders, and wings are black and are adorned with white horizontal bars, creating the appearance of a ladder, hence the common name. The legs and feet are also black, as is the straight but sturdy bill. The belly and other underparts are tan gray and are typically mottled with small black spots. Like most avian species, the male is the most colorful of the two sexes. Male ladder-backed woodpeckers have a red crown on the top of their head, as well as a black line that extends from the eye to the neck that is quite noticeable on the white face. Females, although looking very similar, lack the red crown on the head. Many times, this species of woodpecker is heard before it is actually seen, either by its clear, high-pitched, one-syllable call or the tap-tap-tap sound of its hunting propensities. These hunting propensities include the animal clinging to a tree vertically with its specially adapted feet, while banging its head into the trunk of the tree repeatedly as it attempts to stir up the insects living inside of the bark. Once the bark has been penetrated, these insects are carefully removed from the tree by the long barbed tongue that the woodpecker possesses. Insects such as ants are favored items of its diet, although fruit is also consumed readily. Many are heard before they are actually seen when they make their high-pitched pick sound while flying from hunting ground to hunting ground. Their flight pattern consists of an up-and-down flight with rapidly beating wings alternating with short times of gliding. These birds typically prefer to live a solitary life during much of the year, although they will pair up during the breeding season, with the male and female remaining monogamous during such time. It is unclear which sex, or even if both sexes, build the nest in the cavity of dead trees or larger cactus species, such as agaves. The eggs are white and number between 2 and 7 per brood. Incubation time is only 12 to 13 days, and the young are unable to take care of themselves at hatching. Both sexes will feed them during the next 3 weeks as the young learn to fly. Typically, only one brood per year is produced. Ladder-backed woodpeckers are a common to abundant bird throughout their range in Texas and are by far the most common woodpecker of the western half of the state. Attract them to your yard with bird baths, as well as providing feeders filled with cactus fruits and even peanut butter. Michael Price is the owner of Wild About Texas, an educational company that specializes in venomous animal safety training, environmental consultations, and ecotourism. Contact him at wildabouttexas@gmail.com. And now here is our column by Allison Watkins. Propagating plants is a money-saving option to consider for your yard. Special to the San Angelo Standard Times, published May 6th. What a difference a good spring rain makes. It's nice to see so much more green new growth and colorful flowers blooming. While things are definitely looking up in home landscapes after the winter storm turned everything brown, there are some plants that were permanently damaged or killed, and many homeowners have spots to fill and replacements to make in flower beds. The more tender perennials like plumbago, lantana, and pride of Barbados are not coming back for some. One way to save some money on replacing landscape plants is to try propagating some new ones for yourself. It will take quite a bit longer to get an established plant from a cutting than purchasing from a nursery. So if you want a quicker impact, check out local nurseries to see what they have in stock. But if you have friends or neighbors that have plants growing that you like and would like to see in your landscape, ask them if you can take some stem cuttings and start your own new plants. Many shrubs and perennials that are common in landscapes can be grown from stem cuttings, things like salvia, roses, lantana, yarrow, etc. The best time and type of cutting to take depends on the specific plant, but many plants can root from softwood cuttings. Some will need rooting hormone, available at nurseries and garden centers, and some will root readily without. For general tips, visit https://tomgreen.agrilife.org/horticulture for a couple of links to plant propagation information. For example, rose cuttings can be taken any time of year, but tend to be most successful when taken in the cooler seasons. The easiest part of the plant to root is the tip of stems that recently bloomed. Using a sharp, clean set of pruners, take a cutting about 6 to 8 inches long. Keep track of which end is up. Remove spent blooms and or hips. Pull off leaves from the lower half of the cutting and immediately stick into prepared, damp potting mix. Rooting hormone can increase success, but is not necessary for rose cuttings. Take more cuttings than you need, because they will not all take root. Place in bright light, but not direct sun that will dry the cuttings out. and cover with clear plastic to trap humidity. The cuttings must not be allowed to dry out. Most varieties of roses will start to root after a few weeks, but leave them until they have a strong root system. Then carefully repot into their own container and allow to continue to grow and harden off before planting outside in the landscape. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.